Coming up later this month, we've scheduled an interview with Jim Daly from Focus on the Family. He'll be joining us to talk about Truth Rising, this whole project. So really looking forward to that. And I don't know, you know, it's I don't think it's exactly like the Truth Project that the Focus on the Family did years ago. But the quality and impact it's going to have is very similar. So you may want, if you're part of the Truth Project years ago, you may dial into this and go check out the trailer on our homepage at klyt.fm. And while you're there, you'll see information about the new lineup of Saturday morning content for youth, for kids, quite honestly. And then actually, as that block goes on, by the end of the block, Saturday mornings, it's from 7 to 9. It starts with Paws and Tales and then the Brinkman Adventures and Adventures in Odyssey, more for the kids. And then the whole family, and at times maybe more the adults, will be drawn into Focus on the Family's radio theater. But that's 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings. All those details on our homepage at klyt.fm. Full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And a lot of the content we're taking, of course, from Paul's blogs at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, welcome back into the studio.
Hey, good to be back with you, Steve.
As always, lots to talk about and always appreciate your time to walk us through some of these blogs. Hey, before we jump into that, I did want to say, these guys go unseen and unheard, but I do my best to let you know about the staff we have here. Tayshawn is at the helm engineering today's show, and you don't know because you're not here. At the drop of a hat, this guy jumps in and makes things happen, and we appreciate you, Tayshawn, the work you're doing with the station, and thanks for making it sound so good. Paul, let's jump right into one of the blogs that you recently written. Deb Holland goes full Marxist in recent tweet is the headline. Walk us through this.
Yeah. Deb Holland, of course, is running for governor in New Mexico. She is up for election, as all candidates for statewide office will be in 2026. So it's early in the governor's race, but she has been very active traveling around New Mexico and really also on social media. And, you know, we've been observing her and her approach to the issues. We know she is probably going to lean left, even for a Democrat, but some of her rhetoric, especially on Twitter, and who knows if she herself is running her account on Twitter or X, or if she has a paid staffer doing it, but whatever they're doing, they're really emphasizing her left-wing credentials. And recently, they put out a tweet saying, "Millionaires and billionaires only care about one thing, themselves. The people that put us in this mess aren't going to get us out. Too many families fall through the cracks. As governor, I bring valuable experience and proven leadership to fix this broken system." Now, in addition to extreme left-wing antipathy for people who, you know, I like the people who make products that make my life better. Even if I disagree with them on various political issues, guys like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, and numerous other very wealthy people, as long as they earn their money honestly, I have no opinion with those guys whatsoever. And again, Deb Holland, I realize it's a short format approach here with X or Twitter, but she's just spewing and lumping millionaires and billionaires into the same boat. You know, there's only one billionaire in New Mexico, and he manages and runs a solar company called Array Solar. So is that guy a problem? I don't know. Millionaires. I bet a lot of doctors who practice in New Mexico are millionaires. Are they a problem? So, and this broken system she speaks at and the people that got us into this mess, one could argue just as easily that her own party, the current governor, the legislature of her own party, are the ones that have gotten us into this mess. If us is New Mexicans, if us is some other group, then I don't know. But it's frustrating in both perspective, from both perspectives. The lack of specific English language and the broad-based attack on people who presumably have made their money the old-fashioned way by earning it, making better products, and making our lives better. So
I was waiting for you to say, earn it.
Yes, exactly. They earn it. The old Smith Barney commercials. Yeah, as long as they earn it, that is not a problem. And it's hard to say that any of the most well-known people, you can argue there's, I'm willing to talk cases of people who have earned buckets full of money without doing anything productive for society. But, rather than just attacking anybody who's made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's kind of a very left-wing approach, is we should not have any billionaires in this country or this state or this whatever. Again, I think the folks who build better products, Elon Musk is a current example of somebody who fits in with the billionaire class, who's not very popular. He was very popular when his electric vehicles were his main business. I think many people, although it seems like the left has moved against space and exploration of space, but SpaceX has done some amazing things.
Or just Elon's part of it.
Right. Yeah. And that gets into the hypocrisy of it all. And one last point, when Deb Haaland ran was added to the Biden administration and the Interior Department, she was noteworthy because Forbes found that as a 64-year-old attorney, she had zero assets. She declared zero assets to her name. I would much rather have a billionaire making financial decisions on behalf of my state or my country than somebody has no assets to speak of. That is a scary proposition. If you don't have any assets to your own name, what does that say about your acumen in making decisions on bigger issues?
And again, you'll find that at errorsofenchantment.com. As you're walking through that and the tweet, when I hear, first of all, like you said, kind of anyone with a considerable amount of money was kind of lumped into they are all, that they only care about themselves. And my first knee-jerk reaction thought was, most of us have a pretty good selfish streak running through us, if we're being honest. And it brought to light, and I want to use this illustration because it's somewhat applicable when you're considering the ideology of different groups. President Reagan was a master storyteller, and I watched a video this morning of him talking about a liberal couple that he was acquainted with. I don't know if they're at a party or where they were, but their daughter was with them, and their young daughter said, "Mr. President, I would like to someday be president of the United States." And he said, "Well, that's a very honorable thing to aspire to." And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. He said, "If you were president now, what would be the first thing you would do?" And she said, "I would feed and house the homeless." That's very admirable. He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you come over to my home? You can pull weeds, sweep the drive, do the yard work. I'll pay you $50 to do that. And then we can go over to the homeless person on the corner and you can give them that $50 so they can have something to eat and hopefully have a place to stay for the evening." And she said, "Well, Mr. President, why don't I just have him come and do the work?" Mm-hmm. And Ronald Reagan said, "Welcome to the Republican Party."
Right. Exactly. And yes, we all do want to help those that are less fortunate than ourselves. I also believe very strongly that the capitalist system and free markets and limited government have brought more people out of poverty than any other single force on the planet.
And to, you know, the church does their part to reach this group. I wasn't around 100 years ago, but I think years ago probably did more than they do now, and has probably abandoned some of that to the government to take care of. And it's something to consider and pray about personally, and as a literal your church that you go to on Sunday, and as the body of Christ, I think something we should be very aware of and very willing to do what we can to bring those who need assistance the assistance that they need, and teach a man to fish so he'll eat every day. But some good thoughts. And appreciate you listening. We've got a lot of topics to cover, we'll take a quick break and come back. We're full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and we'll get back to more of the blogging content that he has provided via errorsofenchantment.com. The other website we often mention is riograndefoundation.org. And, of course, Tipping Point, New Mexico. Paul, what can people expect to find maybe the latest there?
Yeah, Tipping Point, New Mexico, tippingpointnm.com is our podcast. Every week, my colleague Wally and I dissect the issues facing our state, and in a separate podcast, we also interview different folks of interest from predominantly New Mexico, but often from across the country. Currently, our most recent interview is with a gentleman named Bronson Korn. He is a rancher in southeastern New Mexico dealing with a prospective power line, high tension, you know, one of the big kinds of power lines that he and a lot of other folks in eastern New Mexico are dealing with, where eminent domain, where the government takes your property, could be used on swaths of land up to 15 miles wide. So the government just rolling in and taking this ranch land all across eastern New Mexico up to 15 miles wide, which is a pretty healthy stretch of land for some power lines. So
is that county, state, or federal?
It would be a federally driven project, and federal government using the eminent domain process there. It was something, of course, cooked up under the previous administration, the Biden administration. But so far, Trump administration has not canceled it. And, there's just a lot of concerns about this situation. So check it out, tippingpointsnm.com.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back with more with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation right after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, we had mentioned some programming coming up from Focus on the Family talking about back to school. We're going to get that to you next week, along with saving the unborn, defending the unborn on the mission field on early mid next week, ABQ Connect. So make sure you're tuned in for that. The full hour today we'll be spending with Paul Gessing. In our first segment, we talked about an article, Paul wrote a blog post from Paul at ArizonaEnchantment.com about Deb Holland, something posted by her or her administration or her team preparing as they run for governor. You can go find that. All the content we're talking about today at errorsofenchantment.com. Of course, another resource for you in the work that the Rio Grande Foundation is doing is found at riograndefoundation.org. And going into the break, Paul mentioned tippingpointnm.org, the website for the podcast that he does with others. All great resources. Paul, appreciate your diligence to bring us the information we're covering today, including information about not only the film industry in New Mexico, But nationwide, I don't know about worldwide, but nationwide, and it kind of receding a little bit.
Yeah, for many years, a couple of decades, New Mexico has been involved in subsidizing the film industry here in the state. And we've had, of course, Breaking Bad and other movies and films shot here, TV shows, et cetera. But as some new data highlighted, this state and other states are seeing a decline in the film industry. And it's hard to say, I'm not an expert on the industry itself, but I'll share some of this information with you. First and foremost, real quickly, to go back through the history, Gary Johnson, our governor way back when, he actually got the film subsidy program started. Bill Richardson really kind of made it what it is today by giving film 25 cents on the dollar refundable credit. That means if you spend $100, you get $25 back from the taxpayers. That is very unique. Martinez, the Republican governor previous to the current one, attempted to put a restraint on the film subsidy payouts. Tough to budget when they would come in and say, here, pay us for all these films we've made here in your state. So she and the legislature imposed a $50 million cap annually on what could be paid out to Hollywood film companies. And then when Michelle Lujan Grisham, the current governor, came in, she was benefiting from the beginnings of the oil and gas boom. She paid $300 million of our money to pay off those subsidies, because the $50 million cap was just that, an annual cap. They were compiling big payouts that then ultimately Michelle Lujan Grisham did pay out $300 million. And she subsequently expanded the program to up to 40 cents on the dollar. So now Hollywood can film here and get up to 40 cents for every dollar they spend, or $40 for every $100 they spend. But even that is not enough to keep this industry going here in New Mexico, because a couple of years ago, they spent $740 million in New Mexico filming. That has dropped precipitously to $323 million between July 2024 and June 2025. So we're talking very recent information here, and a less than half annual spend. On top of that, Santa Fe Studios, up the road in Santa Fe, was built with a lot of taxpayer investments. Millions of dollars from the state and the county, including an industrial revenue bond, which, as you'll recall, Steve, is essentially a exemption on your property taxes, more or less. It depends, but a pretty generous property tax exemption. And of course, the costs of that, as with all these subsidies, are borne by we the people, the taxpayers of New Mexico, or in this case, Santa Fe County to an extent. So we've also built film schools. We've also done all kinds of other things to support Hollywood. And now the industry seems to be, if not dying, at least shrinking rather dramatically. And again, I have my assumptions and thoughts on that, one of which is that they overinvested in streaming services. You know, how many streaming services are there now? The average person, while Americans, I think you can safely say, watch too much TV or too much programming, there's just been such an upsurge in those services. And then I believe AI may be the fundamental shift that is really changing Hollywood, because now you can make very high quality content without the studio, without so much as real people in many films and many products. So I don't know, but I think this could be a new normal. And of course, at the Rio Grande Foundation, we're not just talking about the negatives associated with all these taxpayer subsidies, but what could have been done. A permanent business, new businesses brought here, new money brought to New Mexico's economy by what? Simply lowering taxes, making New Mexico more business friendly, and not having the politicians pick and choose which industries we go for. That would have been the ideal, but that's not how New Mexico got to 50th in so many of these studies and reports.
So, Paul, the money taxpayers of New Mexico are paying to the film industry You and I have often talked on this show about the surplus New Mexico has because of oil and gas, and how it's not being, you know, it's just kind of sit, you know, the rainy day thing. We're, you know, well, we're not going to fix things, or we're not going to do this or that. We're going to put the money there for, is that a big part of where, you know, 40% of what is currently $323 million and what was as high as $740 million, 40% of those numbers annually, is that where the rainy day money's going?
That is certainly one place that some of the permanent funds and the dollars are going. You know, the thing with the permanent fund money is that it's really fungible. You know, if government expands and the size of government expands, there's less money to put away. And as you know, while the putting the money away is what has really been done, in addition to a lot of government spending, this is not the way to do things. The way to do things is to make New Mexico a more business-friendly place. We have a lot of issues. I don't know that over the 20 years I've been living in New Mexico and running the Rio Grande Foundation, that there's ever been a more difficult, frustrating, upsetting time to be in this state and in this city with all of the sad and tragic stories. I mean, kids getting shot in UNM residences, and then an Uber driver just shot in cold blood. Our education system's dead last. Our state population has stagnated. These are tough times, and we could do better as a state. We have the most potential of any state in the country, bar none. That is not just my statement. That is, I believe, widely understood. But New Mexico and the politicians need to get out of our way, and we need to get out of our own way by stopping electing big governments, politicians who want government to hang on to all the money, and we the people to suffer for lack of resources, lack of jobs, lack of economic opportunity.
Yeah, as many of my friends would say, we're better than this. You know, you and I both love the state. You know, geographically, it's a beautiful place to live. And you know, there's a lot of great people here, and there's a lot of great organizations like Rio Grande Foundation and other groups doing great work here. And yeah, it sure would be nice to see us start climbing. And we talk about the lists, and you know, just this last week, what another one came out where New Mexico is what found to be the 50th
worst state to live in the country.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's embarrassing. Honestly, it's embarrassing and it's sad because there's such potential here. And we talk about it every month, Paul.
Well, yeah, you look at the states that are down the list with us, and a lot of them have a long culture of challenges. You know, in the case of Mississippi and some of those deep southern states, many of which are on those lists as well, you have the legacy of slavery and racial issues. They're also tremendously hot and humid, and that is not, yeah, it's more bearable with air conditioning, but it's certainly not the optimal temperature. Mississippi, yes, they have, you know, beachfront property to an extent, but that's a tiny fraction of the state. New Mexico has beautiful mountains.
We have a lot of beachfront property.
Where?
Here. Just no water.
No water. Yeah, that's true. But New Mexico, you know, really makes its bones by being a low humidity state with the beautiful mountains, the recreational opportunities that they all bring. And we're in the midst of the most fast growing area of the entire country. We're right between states that have been dominating in terms of where people are moving from across the country: Texas, Colorado, Arizona, Utah. These are the states that people want to be in. Now, Texas is not about the mountains. It's about zero income tax. It's about a big geographical state where you can live affordably. And, you know, Arizona is in many ways as pretty as New Mexico,
but
much hotter, much less optimal temperatures in my estimation. Maybe some of y'all like 120 degrees, but they probably like the low taxes, the economic freedom, the low regulations, and that's why Arizona booms while we stand along on the sidelines.
Well, Paul, we're up against the break, but before we head there, can you tease the next blog we'll be looking at in regards to new website tracking interstate money moves and more?
Yeah, well, one of the ways that we can measure people moving and their money moving from state to state is a new website called votewithyourfeet.net. And that's exactly what it does. And we'll discuss a little bit of what happens and what's going on in this site and how we can more easily tell why New Mexico faces some of the challenges it does.
All right. We'll get to that right after the break on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us. Full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org, and the content we're covering today you'll find posted in the blogs from Paul at errorsofenchantment.com, and you can catch his podcast at tippingpointnm.com. If you missed yesterday's show, we had Colonel Quick in here from the Folds of Honor covering information about the organization. But the 10th Annual Patriot Dinner coming to the Isleta Convention Center Saturday, September 6th. Still looking for people to get tables for that event. The benefits, the proceeds go towards scholarships for the families of those serving in the military who've lost the breadwinner in the family due to their service or loss or injury to them, where they're disabled and unable to provide what they were prior to being disabled or lost. And you can find out more about the organization and register for the 10th Annual Patriot Dinner at newmexico.foldsofhonor.com. And we also spent time with Ray Mondragon with the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. He actually brought Dave Robbins in. Dave is going to be the speaker for the Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico meeting. It's free every month at Faith Bible Church in Albuquerque, Central and Moon. And they'll be meeting next Tuesday night, August 19th at 7 p.m. Details about that at csfnm.org. Paul teased before we went to the break about a new website tracking intrastate money moves and more. Paul, what can you share with us?
Yeah, again, this new website is called votewithyourfeet.net, and you can look up information showing which states are seeing people. This is domestic migration only, so this is not immigration. This is people coming into various states from other states and leaving other states. And you see right away when you go to the website and you look at moving maps, that's where people are moving. New Mexico sticks out, as it typically does in the Southwest, as a state where people are moving to. In fact, between 2012 and 2022, New Mexico saw net domestic migration of 46,593 outflowing people from our state. Arizona, on the other hand, saw 483,368 move in. Texas, 1.27 million moving in. Colorado, 194,000 moving in. And so you can see that people want to be in those states surrounding New Mexico, but they somehow skip over New Mexico. And then when it comes to personal income, this is IRS information. This is not somebody just making things up. New Mexico lost $474 million in net domestic migration out of the state between 2012 and 2022. Arizona got $29 billion, nearly $30 billion. Texas, $54, $55 billion. Other states, you know, we do compare relatively well with states like California, where we actually have an advantage. But when you talk about states that we're really competing with and states that are right next to us in the Southwest, yet again, New Mexico is losing people and resources to other more economically advanced places.
And I was going to ask why is that, but you kind of did in your last phrase.
Yep.
But any more specifics on that?
I would just encourage folks to go to votewithyourfeet.net. It is there is a blog post at heirsofenchantment.com, but this is one of those sites I think you want to bookmark because they're going to be adding more information. I know I will be looking at this information and writing about it and using it in my research, et cetera. There's just a lot of good stuff.
I mean,
there.
To put a visualize, and I could be off a little bit on the numbers, but it's essentially, New Mexico lost a city maybe the size of Roswell in population. Of course, Roswell's still there. Don't hear me wrong. but Texas gained, kind of a new San Antonio. I don't know, Austin. Millions of people, over a million people headed to Texas. Well, what'd you say, about 45,000 people just saying, New Mexico, it's been nice. Goodbye.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. And
obviously hasn't been nice.
Right. And a lot of people, I understand, don't care much for Phoenix or Denver and the crowds. And I totally get that. But on the other hand, our children and grandchildren are leaving the state of New Mexico, and they are relocating due to better job opportunities in these other states. New Mexico's actually become a state that's reliant on retirees to maintain its population level while we've continued to lose those younger people and 18 and under.
Tax-wise, it's not necessarily a great state to move to for retirees, is it?
We are not a particularly great state for retirees. We're one of only a handful that has a tax on Social Security. But, there are many different reasons people move. And we do not have Social Security taxes for middle-income people. We seem to have something philosophical in the legislature against lowering taxes for everybody. But we do have lower property taxes in some cases than other states. We're lower home values than other states, although those have gone up tremendously in recent years. We're not as expensive of a place as some other places. And, if you want that Southwest sun and the mountains, you still might wind up in New Mexico as a retiree. Your job opportunities are unnecessary. There's not really a factor.
All right. Let's move on to another blog posted at heirsofenchantment.com. Paul Gessing, president of Rio Grande Foundation, is our guest. Paul, special session. Is it inevitable?
I believe it is. The governor has said that she's going to have a special session either in September or October. She'll obviously have certain dates that she avoids and ultimately decides at what point she wants to have that special session. But what's more important than the exact dates, and I believe it will be September, October, obviously staying away from things like Balloon Fiesta at all, but she wants to do a few things. Specifically, she is very, very concerned about the Big Beautiful Bill and reductions to Medicaid and food assistance programs, even though those don't take effect for a few years. But I think she wants to burnish her progressive bona fides for a possible run for another office, including someday maybe the U.S. Senate. So she wants to make sure that she's got those progressives lined up and she's doing something about potential cuts to Medicaid. And it's not cuts, it's reductions in the rate of growth, but it's portrayed as massive, massive cuts, et cetera. Then she wants to enhance criminal penalties for felons convicted of possessing a firearm. That's all well and good, and I'm fine with that. It's kind of funny that she has to bring that in for a special session because it's not like the legislature hasn't faced similar proposals, and there's plenty of other issues with public safety that could be addressed. This is kind of like, enhance criminal penalties for felons convicted of possessing a firearm. Yay. I'll take it, but it's not exactly special session worthy. And then she wants, this is the third thing, and there's three items on her agenda. She wants to prohibit New Mexico counties and cities from entering into agreements with the federal government on immigration detention facilities. So, of course, immigration is now a hot button issue. It's certainly one where the political left is very, very strident in their opposition to what Trump is doing. And these facilities, for better or for worse, they are there in communities and they are federal dollars. I'm not a fan of necessarily relying on federal dollars, but if the federal government is going to have these facilities, they might as well have some of them in New Mexico and hire New Mexicans, have the money pumped through our state. But that's not the way the progressives see things. They just want to get rid of these immigration detention facilities.
All right. Well, again, we're up against the break, and we've got one more segment to get to. Paul, a little tease on the environmental group's concern, concern that MLG's clean fuel standard would worsen pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Any more tease than that heading into the break before we come back with that?
No, it's just this clean fuel standard. Republicans, many Republicans say that it's going to increase gas prices by 50 cents a gallon.
Okay.
It has not taken effect yet, but hearings will be held this fall to finalize it, and it'll take effect probably as soon as the beginning of 2026.
All right, and all the topics we're covering today, you'll find at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul Gessing, president of Rio Grande Foundation, our guest for the full hour, riograndefoundation.org. We'll be back with more right after this on ABQ Connect. All right, full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. You know, we throw out the websites, but really take the time to go to these websites. There's a lot of good information about the organization and the work they're doing, and information that is important to you. You'll find at riograndefoundation.org, and then the blog posts from Paul. Mostly you, Paul, right? Others from time to time will write.
From time to time, yes.
But
I do a lot of the writing there, though.
Errorsofenchantment.com. And as I mentioned, the podcast that Paul puts together with others at Tipping Point New Mexico, it's tippingpointnm.org. A lot of great resources
tippingpointnm.com. Yeah.
Tippingpointnm.com. Thanks, Paul. And yeah, it's resources really that are important to you. You know, it's on the issues that you and your family want to know about. So stay with us for the rest of today's show. We're going to cover a couple of different blogs. We touched on one briefly before heading into the break, but Paul, did you say something about the price of gas going up?
Well, it's going to happen, but gradually. And that's the clean fuel standard. The Environmental Improvement Board, which we've talked about a lot on this show, an unelected body appointed by the governor, will be essentially finalizing the regulation. This was all passed in the legislature in 2023. And it's a new regulation that's going to tinker with the contents of what happens in your gas tank. And of course, we've got already an ethanol mandate at the federal level, something that really needs to be repealed, because actually, upon further review and environmental groups, and this is why I brought this up, is it was written up in the Albuquerque Journal. And what we're planning on doing in New Mexico is actually going to potentially worsen pollution here in New Mexico and across the world, because, of course, we're not just doing things here in New Mexico. In fact, this corn and ethanol that we stick in our gas tanks and will be having to stick more of in our gas tanks thanks to this clean fuel standard does more harm than good. It is widely considered to be harmful to the environment, not just what comes out of your exhaust pipe, but also the pesticides and the land use that is required to grow all of this corn, ship it, process it, the water, et cetera. It is not green. And again, this was an article in the Albuquerque Journal. there was an organization cited. You know, I'll admit that organizations are split on their support or opposition. I tend to think that a lot of them just support this because it's the latest fad and the latest craze. But one New Mexico organization, Food and Water Watch, came out against it. And to their credit, I was in committee hearings throughout the process on this legislation, and they also said the same thing in those committee hearings. So unfortunately, the added costs are unlikely to actually do much to improve air quality or the overall environmental quality.
Paul, do you see any connection to the war on internal combustion vehicles?
Oh, absolutely. The Clean Fuel Standard is part and parcel of all that. It's been enacted, I believe, the West Coast states, California, Oregon, and Washington. I think New Mexico is the fourth, and it's just another indicator of my broader critique of this governor, that she looks to California, which is one of the states that has failed on a policy perspective. You talk about another state that is absolutely gorgeous, has all kinds of beauty there in California, and yet remains a state that in recent years has been losing people, losing money to other states because of their terrible, terrible economic and regulatory policies. So this clean fuel standard is, right out of the war on fossil fuels. And of course, New Mexico is an oil-producing state, so it's also a war directly on our economy by substituting corn for what comes out of the ground right here in New Mexico is a great indicator of it's not helping New Mexicans.
Kind of shoot ourselves in the foot.
Oh, we need steel-toed boots in New Mexico because we shoot ourselves in the foot on the regular.
Yeah. Well, the final blog we wanted to address today, again, found at errorsofenchantment.com. Let me read the headline. Group opposed to medical malpractice reform received all its financial support from trial attorneys.
Yeah, a group called New Mexico Safety Over Profit took in $1.3 million in donations in the last few years. And there was a battle that went on over whether they had to disclose that the donor information. This is one of the leading groups that was opposed to reforming New Mexico's medical malpractice laws. We, of course, know we have a medical provider shortage in this state. They often cite medical malpractice as a reason for not coming here or leaving New Mexico. This, $1.3 million is about, it's four or five times what the Rio Grande Foundation's annual budget is. So these are not trivial players. They portrayed themselves, safety over profit. This is a group that's supported by average New Mexicans. People like you, Steve, just wanting to keep New Mexicans safe, not the big profiteers in the healthcare industry, et cetera. Well, they had to release their donor information, and surprise, surprise, what they found is that 100% of their funding came from trial attorneys and their ilk, people directly involved in profiting from that particular industry of suing to get doctors, when they do things wrong. And I'm not of the opinion that doctors never do things wrong. They make mistakes. And obviously, the medical malpractice is a part of that. But that also doesn't mean that you should drive up insurance costs so that we lose doctors out of New Mexico. And unfortunately, that's what exactly is happening. And my post that I write goes on to highlight the fact that I believe the three-legged stool of the Democratic Party's financial and special interests are trial attorneys, unions, especially those in the education sector, and radical environmental groups. And I highlight that trial attorneys and unions have really latched on to two critical areas of our state and its economy. One being, of course, this medical provider issue. The teachers' unions, of course, dominate our education system and also focus all their efforts on electing groups from one party. Then radical environmentalists try to kill every other area of the economy by prohibiting oil and gas, by prohibiting economic activity. They tend to fight against very hard mining and other activities that really support our civilization. So it's a trifecta that until the voters of New Mexico look beyond the fancy advertisements, the campaigns that these well-funded groups get behind, that we're going to wind up with the same problems, which is a lack of doctors, a medical system that is way too expensive, a school system that fails, and then economic activity that's restrained thanks to, and prices that go up thanks to these radical environmental groups.
All right. Well, listen, Paul Gessing has been our guest for the full hour. Paul, appreciate your time. And again, want to remind the listener they can find all the topics we covered today at errorsofenchantment.com. Watch for the podcast information and the podcast at tippingpointnm.com. And of course, the website for the organization is riograndefoundation.org. 25th anniversary celebration of Rio Grande Foundation coming up November 8th. Mark your calendars. And Paul will talk maybe more about that next month.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, we'll do that next month.
All right. And stay with us. Great programming on the way. Jay Sekulow after this on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.